Yes, to the colloquium. I'm not known for giving long introductions, but Rory is an exception because we've had an interesting experience some 18 years ago. Alain and I had a group of five students who wanted to work on knot theory, and the paper that had been recommended to us was Rory's paper on Vasiliev invariants. We spent the semester trying to understand the paper. And at the end, I wrote to Dror and I asked him, would he be willing to come and spend a week with us on Lake Brienz? Surprisingly, he was willing. And it was really very good. He and the students had intense contact. The only problem was that towards the end, he started feeling a little ill. He explained to us that he has a son, 2 years old. The chalet was accessible only by boat. I took him to a doctor and he had jauch. I don't know what that is in English. Scarlet, you know something? So that was our first experience. It was a little shorter than we had planned, but maybe just half a day.
Okay. No, I think I survived all right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I should say that it was a great pleasure, and I thank Christine again for inviting me 18 years ago and now too. And I still have a warm spot for Bern and this area ever since. And I should say something, you know, that shouldn't be on video, but it is. By the way, the talk will be on video and the URL is up here. But my wife planned the birth of our kids. She timed the birth of our kids like to the week. Everything was planned long in advance. And our second child was born a month late because of that trip to Bern.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Now you know. Anyway, my talk will follow a handout, and it will be unusual in that the first half will be hard and sort of difficult, and the second half will be nice and colorful. But overall, the story is that I will be telling you that there is a certain general machine, and I will describe it very quickly, but there is a general machine that takes subjects in topology and produces problems in algebra. And I will describe one problem in algebra and then tell you what subject in topology leads to that problem in algebra. But unfortunately, for the proofs, you'll have to go to the papers. And so, you know, over here there is a definition of a URL. And the relevant paper is at that URL/WKO. Okay, so I think I just told you the content of the abstract, and now let me tell you the algebra problem, and I'll do it very, very briefly because it's not really what I care about. What I care about is, it is what I care about when I write the papers, but for the purpose of the colloquium of this lecture, it's not really this is not really what I care about, and what I care about is describing the machine and describing the topology and the sort of unusual fact that such a generic machine applied to something so disjoint with that leads to that. Okay? So the problem is, again, a problem in algebra. The Kashiwara-Wern conjecture, which by now is a theorem, due to Alexeyev and Neyrenken and Alexeyev and Torossian. And the problem is to find two formal power series in the completed free algebra in two generators X and Y. So, you know, the free algebra is what you get when you allow yourself to write brackets completely freely. So you write X bracket Y, all of this bracket Y, all of this x bracketed with it, and all of this bracket with the bracket of y and x. Okay? So when you allow yourself to write such things completely freely, and the only thing you mod out by is you take such expressions modulo the relations that define the algebra. So x bracket y, so a bracket b for any a and b is equal to negative of b bracket a, so the asymmetry of the bracket, and another relation saying that a bracket the b bracket b bracket the bracket of b and c plus cyclic permutations of the same thing is equal to zero. This is the so-called Jacobi relation. And such things can be viewed as trees with labels on the leaves. So the tree has to continue, I suppose, but such things can be viewed as binary trees with labels on the leaves, modulo some relations. And then the Kashiwara problem says that two such infinite combinations of trees, infinite in the sense that they're finite at any fixed degree, but I'm allowing the degree to rise to infinity, like as if it's a power series, but in some non-commutative sense. So there are two such power series that satisfy two messy equations. So one messy equation is written here, and I'm not, and it's an equation in the Frehley algebra itself, and I don't even want to spend time interpreting it. I only want to say it exists, okay? And a second equation says, well, again, even messier and even harder to explain, but let me only say that it involves these funny differential operators that amount to, whenever you have such a tree, you sum over all possible ways of connecting its root next to one of the leaves, and then what you're left with is a cycle with hairs labeled with the same generate x and y as before. So these things are called cyclic words, and again, this equation is written in the world of cyclic words. Now, who cares? Why should you care? So, very roughly speaking, and again, this is extremely rough, the statement that I'm about to make, this implies a certain statement about convolutions. So it's the statement that if you take two invariant functions on the on a Lie group, then, well, using the exponential map, you can pull them back to two invariant functions, invariant under conjugation, on the Lie algebra. And then the claim is that their convolution using the Lebesgue measure on the Lie algebra is the same as their convolution using the Haar measure on the Lie group. Okay? And it's obviously a statement of sort of fundamental meaning in Lie groups, if it's true, in Lie theory, if it's true, and the claim is that it is true. And furthermore, it has implications in representation theory. It has something to do with the so-called orbit method, but again, that's not the point right now. In one word, how could the two statements, one statement about combinations of trees and wheels, and another statement about Lie groups and Lie algebras, these are finite dimensional Lie groups and Lie algebras, how could they be related? So the point is that you have to show the equality of two integrals. One integral is the integral that stands for convolutions on the Lie algebra, and the other is the integral that stands for convolutions on the Lie group. First of all, you pull them back so that both are on the same space. Okay, so there is the Lie group and the Lie algebra are locally isomorphic, so you can pull back the integral, so the integral from the group to the Lie algebra, and now you have to show the equality of two integrals on the Lie algebra. The way you do it is by finding a measure-preserving transformation, and again, I'm lying left and right, okay? But in spirit, what I'm telling is true, okay? So you find a measure-preserving transformation that takes one integrand to the other, And then you've shown that the two integrals are equal. Okay? But you still have to find that measured preserving transformation. To find it, you find a general formula for it. You find a formula for it that is valid in every Lie algebra whatsoever. You find a formula in terms of the bracket, and only in terms of the bracket, and which is valid in every Lie algebra whatsoever. And then the point, or some effort, will go into showing how trees can be interpreted as formulas for measure-preserving transformations in arbitrary Lie algebras. So then, the first statement, the first part of the conjecture, this part, will say that you find a formula that pulls one integrand to the other. And then, the second part, the second statement, becomes the fact that that formula that you wrote is a measure describes a measure-preserving transformation, as opposed to just a general transformation. Okay, all of this takes a huge amount of work, but it's not at all the subject I want to talk about. Okay? Now, as I said, I want to show, so take this as a given, that this is an interesting conjecture. And now I want to tell you that there is a machine that takes topology and tells you and gets you to this conjecture. So this conjecture is also a conjecture about topology. Okay? And so let me tell you about the machine. And the machine is much more general, and it applies in many, many, many other places, and various other instances of it leads to other interesting questions in algebra. So let G be a group. Let K be the group ring of that group. So the set of all formal linear combinations, finite formal linear combinations of elements of that group with coefficients in the rationals. If you don't like the rationals, it's not very essential, but it's easier. Okay? Then within that group ring, there is the so-called augmentation ideal. The augmentation ideal is the subset of all those linear combinations in which the sum of coefficients is equal to zero. Okay? Now, whenever you have an ideal, you can get a nested sequence of ideals. So first of all, you let I to the 0 be the ring itself, and it contains I to the 1, which is just the ideal itself, but you can take the ideal and raise it to the second power. So in other words, take a look at the set of all products of elements in the of one element in the ideal with another element of the ideal. That will be a smaller ideal. Then look at I cubed, and that's a yet smaller ideal. So overall, you get a filtration by powers of that ideal. Define A to be the so-called associated graded of K completed using this filtration. In other words, it's the infinite direct sum as over all m's of the ideal to the m modulo the ideal to the m plus 1. And note that this sort of it's not hard to show that the associated graded inherits a product from K. Okay? But they're not the same. They're different gadgets, but both of them have a product. Okay? So I have several things to tell you about why this is interesting, and let me tell you the first one, and if you haven't seen about finite type invariants, you may tune out at this point. Okay? But anyway, the point is that look at K, meaning group elements, think maybe the braid group, so these are braids, okay? So they come from topology. Look at K modulo IM plus 1, dual. What's the dual of K modulo IM plus 1? It's functions on K, so invariants of elements of K, which vanish on I to the M plus 1, meaning which, the ideal, the augmentation ideal, is generated by differences. I to the m plus 1 will be product of m plus 1 differences. So vanishing on I to the m plus 1 will sort of mean vanishing on m plus 1 or on plus first order iterated differences. Now differences are like derivatives, combinatorially. Differences are the combinatorial analogs of derivatives. So vanishing on m plus 1 times iterated differences is the combinatorial analog of having the m plus first derivative vanish, which is to say you are a polynomial. So the elements of k modulo I to the m plus 1 should be thought of as polynomials of degree m on a group. So that's in itself a bit entertaining, the fact that it makes sense to speak about polynomial invariants, about things that are polynomial as a function of a braid. And that, of course, generalizes to other things. So you can speak about things which are polynomials as a function of a knot or of a three-manifold. But anyway, this set is the set of polynomial or finite type or Vasiliev invariants of braids or knots or whatever. Okay? And then, by a tiny bit of linear algebra, you can show that understanding all of these sets is precisely equivalent to understanding this direct sum of quotients. I leave the linear algebra for you, but that's one motivation for understanding this associated grade. I'll give you another one and then another one in a minute. Okay? So, but first, another definition. So, an invariant z, so a function z from k to a, so from k to its associated gradient, is called an expansion if it has the following property. If whenever you take an element of the nth power of the ideal, then its invariant, well, its invariant should be an infinite sequence of things, like each one in each space here. So I want it to be a bunch of zeros until you get to the nth place. In the nth place, well, my gamma was in I to the m, so in the nth place I want to see gamma itself, except modulo I to the m plus 1. So it's equivalence class modulo I to the m plus 1, and I don't care what you see after that. So that's an expansion. And a homomorphic expansion is an expansion, well, remember that both k and a were algebras, had a product. So a homomorphic expansion is one that preserves the product. Again, why care? So from the perspective of finite type invariants, that's exactly the realization of the equivalence between studying these and studying these. So it turns out that finding an expansion is exactly the same as finding all polynomial invariants of all degrees on a given group, so of braids or of knots or whatever. Okay. Here's a sort of silly reason, but just to show you that again that the things are related. So let K be, well, not the group ring, but let it be the smooth functions on R to the n, and let I be the ideal of functions that vanish at zero. Then I to the m is functions that vanish m times. Now, functions that vanish m times, modulo functions that vanish m plus 1 times, are precisely polynomials of degree m. So I to the m modulo I to the m plus 1 is homogeneous polynomials, and therefore the direct sum of all of these spaces is precisely the set of power series. So what I want, so z, an expansion, would be a map from C infinity functions to power series, which satisfies some obvious non-degeneracy condition. And if you add to it that it's homomorphic, you want it to you want the expansion of f times b to be f times g to be the expansion of f times the expansion of g. If you look at it a little bit, that's what the Taylor series does. Okay, so. Another reason to look at it. So really what I'm doing here in some sense is to generalize the notion of Taylor or the notions of polynomiality to arbitrary groups. Okay? Just for fun, here's another example of why expansions matter. So let K be the set of all two-dimensional projections of reality. So, you know, if you really want to make it, so here's an example, by the way, okay? A two-dimensional projection of reality. And really, you, if you want, you can think of it as the set of all formal linear combinations of little dots in the plane that have brightness, okay? And to be fair, they have three types of brightness, like the red, the green, and the blue brightnesses, okay? So think of it as if it's made of many, 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 many shiny pixels, okay? And then let me define a descending sequence of subspaces. So K1 will be defined by declaring all such points to be equivalent. So then, if you look at K modulo K1, then really the only information that you have is a single amount of brightness, the overall brightness, and there is a map from K to K modulo K1, and when you apply it to a bear, you get a greenish box, okay? Or you get a single point, which really represents a greenish box, okay? K2 will be, well, you will declare that points inside the upper left quadrant are equivalent to each other, and then also points in the upper right quadrant are equivalent to each other, and then there is a projection from K modulo K2, and it will map our bear to something like that. And then K3 will be sort of, I think the picture makes it clear what the descending sequence of subspaces is. And then those K modulo KI will give you sort of increasingly better pictures of reality of that bear. Okay? The bear, by the way, if you click on w/bear, you'll find where it came from. I'm sure you already know. Okay? Now, what's an expansion? So let's think about it a little bit. So you can check that K3 modulo K4, and in general Kn modulo Kn plus 1, is exactly the kernel of K modulo K4, the obvious map from it into K modulo K3. So an expansion is a way of transmitting the information of the picture. So you by first transmitting the information in K modulo K1. Then you only transmit something into K1 modulo K2, which is the kernel of K modulo K2 into K modulo K1. So it's you only transmit the information that before was lost. So you only transmit the information that exists up to here and that was lost previously. And then you only transmit the information up to here, which previously was lost. Okay? So basically, it's a way of transmitting the information so that on day four, you transmit only up to the fourth approximation, and what you transmit on day five will be only the new information that is necessary to reconstruct day five from day four. There is not a canonical choice of an expansion. So, right, if I have this information, in order to transmit this information, I only need three additional numbers, not all four. But there isn't a canonical choice of how to choose these three additional numbers, okay? And historically, by the way, you know, back when the web was still running on modems and you would show a picture of a bear on your web browser, it would appear, you know, first like that, then like that, then like that. Very quickly, it would sort of improve the resolution. I'm sure you all remember this. Hidden there was a choice of an expansion because you wouldn't want to retransmit information that you've already transmitted when you kind of go through the nth iteration. So an expansion is a choice of a progressive scan algorithm. Now, you see, sometimes you have operations. So over here, there are operations like rotating the picture, okay? A homomorphic expansion will be an expansion which will be compatible with the operations. it's not always trivial to find. Okay. Then the last bit of algebra is the following statement. So in reality, in the finitely presented case, so if the group was finitely presented, what would it mean to find an expansion for that group? It means you have to find Z of the generators so that those values satisfy the relations. That's all. Okay? So it amounts to solving a system of equations where the unknowns are the values of the generators and the equations are equations that correspond to the relations that define the group. And you have to solve this in some graded space. And then the claim, the theorem, joint with Zhuzhana Dancho and available at this URL, is that there is a bijection, okay, more loosely, solving the Kashiwara-Wern problem is exactly equivalent to finding a homomorphic expansion for some thing WK. And WK comes from topology, so let me move on to topology. Are you still with me? Is this okay? Okay, so now in topology. Okay, the topology is the topology of 4D knots. Forget about the algebra, let's talk about four-dimensional knots for a little bit. This looks like a machine, but it's not the same machine, right? This is sort of right. Here's a four-dimensional knot. My convention, or there are several conventions for drawing four-dimensional knots. Here's one of them. Basically, you interpret this thing as if it, well, it's printed in two dimensions, but we're trained at interpreting it as three dimensions. So think of it as a three-dimensional object, and as such, it's rather obvious what it is. But notice that in some places there are gaps. So like here, there is a tube and there is a gap in the tube. Whenever there is a gap in the tube, you should interpret it in a tube or a gap in a surface, you should interpret it as if you don't see the surface because it's dipped down in the fourth dimension. Okay? Just like the standard non-theoretic convention of drawing crossings like this really stands for everything is in the plane except over here where there is a gap, the z coordinate went below zero. Okay? So what is this gadget? Okay, let's start from here. We see a tube. Let's go to the left. Okay? The tube goes under a certain, right? Sorry, above. Because, right, there is a gap here, an annular gap in the bottom of this drum. So it goes above the bottom of this drum, above in the four-dimensional sense. But anyway, it goes into, it becomes this drum, and continues out, so it's still a single tube. So out from here to here, it's still a tube. The tube goes over something, then under something else, and then closes up. Okay? So starting from here, going from to the left, topologically, if I just look at the parameter space, without understanding how it was embedded, well, I just see a tube that gets closed up. Okay? Now let's go to the right. Still a tube, coming to here, it goes under something, then it gets inflated to become a big drum, and it goes over something as it does so, who cares? But then it closes, and as it closes, it goes under something else. But it's still just a tube that's closed up. So overall, this is a sphere. But it's a sphere embedded in R4, and it's a knotted sphere. You can show that it's not isotopic. You cannot deform it to become the standard two-dimensional sphere in R4. So that was an example of a knot in R4. Okay? Here's another example. So this is drawn in the R4 in which the fourth coordinate is T. T is temperature, of course, not time. So where things are red, the temperature are high, so T is big. And when things are blue, the temperatures are low, so T is small. Okay? And you see, this is the actual knot, but it's symmetric around a plane. So here it is cut in half. It's also made of bubble wrap, like the elephant on the backside of your handout. Okay, but think of it as a surface. Okay, so again, it's a capped cube going around and being capped again, so it's a sphere. And there appears to be a singularity here in three dimensions, but there isn't, because the temperatures are different. Likewise here, the temperatures are different. By the way, if that was entirely red, so if this whole part was entirely red, instead of dipping from red to blue, I could just slide it out. However, because it would be non-singular throughout, because the cap here is green, okay? However, if I try to slide it out as it is, this green will eventually intersect with that green, and that's not an embedding, and therefore that will be, so I cannot do it. So this appears to be a knotted sphere. And in fact, an exercise for you is to show that this knotted sphere is the same as that one. It's very hard. And let me show you a third example of how to represent two-dimensional knots in R4. And this one is a little movie clip by Esther Dalvit, who is also an ALT person, but from Italy. So the idea is that now T becomes time, and we have a movie of things in R3. As the things are two-dimensional, as the original things are two-dimensional, at each time slice we see a one-dimensional thing, and the generic one-dimensional thing is a circle. So at each individual time slice, we see a bunch of rings, and as we move time, the rings fly around in R3. So let's see how they fly, and that will represent a certain two-dimensional, in fact, braid in this case, in R4. So hopefully, oops. Do you want to open? Yes, I do want to open it. Of course I do. Oh, come on. Sorry. So, maybe I'll do it from the beginning. I'm sorry. Let's see. First of all, yellow flew through red. Then blue and yellow exchanged places, but externally, not through each other. And then another through exchange, and that's sort of a braid. Now, here's the same thing viewed where with Z and T trading places. So, this is the through, this is the side-by-side interaction, again, a through interaction, and this is what a braid would be, one dimension up. Okay, let's move on. So now I want to present the space of knotted objects in four dimensions using generators and relations. So first of all, what are the generators? So the first generator is, it actually has a two-dimensional notation. And the two-dimensional notation is the same as the ordinary crossing of ordinary knot theory, but it represents something else. Okay? So it represents either a pair of tubes that pass like that. So first of all, red goes over blue and then under blue on the way out. Or alternatively, from a different perspective, it's two flying rings where red flies through blue. Okay? Here's another way of viewing the same thing. So first of all, inflate it so that each purple strand becomes a band, but do it so that the lower band or the band corresponding to the lower strand penetrates through the upper band, as the picture shows. The picture is to be interpreted in R3 as usual. Now let's make it four-dimensional in the following manner. So every time you see a band, you make it into two parallel membranes that are glued together along the edge, so along those brown lines, and these pieces stay in R3 forever. But the membranes themselves, you push one of them up in the t-coordinate and the other one down in the t-coordinate by an amount that is proportional to the distance from the boundary. So this is really a representative of a tube, and this is again a representative of a tube. But those two tubes appear to those two bands intersect in R3, but as tubes in R4, they do not intersect because I suppose the outer one will be pushed a little bit more. Okay. So these are three ways of viewing this little crossing as a four-dimensional thing. Here's another ingredient, another generator. So this is the so-called virtual crossing, or vixing, for people who are lazy about typing too much. So virtual crossings. So the virtual crossing is, well, denoted by two strands that just go through each other, without indicating which one is under and which one is over. As a picture using bands, it actually means that one goes over the other, but it doesn't matter which one. Because you see, when you inflate this to R4, you get two tubes that run side by side, and in R4, this is the same as that. So I think I'll skip the little movie clip that demonstrates it, because I'd rather move on. But as a movie clip, it's a movie of rings that fly side by side and interchange places by flying side by side. And again, it doesn't matter if they interchange places this way or that way, because you can interpolate between the two ways by exchanging this way. Okay? So there is a whole circle worth of ways of exchanging places. Okay. But then there are other generators. There is a strand with a bullet at the end, which topologically means a band which gets capped, which in R4, again using the same inflation procedure, stands for a tube that gets capped. So the things that you get here at the end. Okay? And then there is the last generator. So the last generator is the so-called plus vertex, and in fact there is also a minus vertex. And as a bunch of membranes, it's three bands that meet together with sort of a line of singularity in which the three bands meet. Okay? And topologically, what it stands for is a pair of flying rings that fly, and then one of them comes under the other until they coincide, and then they become one, and from that point on they fly together as one, or they become one. It's a singular operation, the two become one. Okay? So this is, by the way, sort of, in ordinary knot theory, you can talk about knots, but you can also talk about knotted graphs. So things that are embedded in R3 but have vertices. So this is like the trivalent vertex one dimension up. And it has a sign because it actually matters which one comes from below and which one comes from above, but please forget it. Okay. So here are examples for bigger knots that are made out of these ingredients. So, you can have a crossing, a virtual crossing, inflated once you get this, inflated once, twice, I don't know what you get, but it will be an infinite tube which goes from minus infinity to infinity, and, well, when it comes to sort of the visible part of space, it does a certain funny knotting, and then it goes out again. Here's another example. So this one is, well, two crossings capped on two sides, and that's a knotted sphere. That was a knotted infinite tube. This is a knotted compact sphere. In fact, it's the same one as the picture we had before. Okay? Okay, so, oh, here's a riddle for you, just for fun. I will not even explain it. Okay? Next, So what is WK? WK is W knotted objects. W I will not explain. Why this is called W knot theory? Because I didn't want it to be U knot theory and I didn't want it to be V knot theory. But let's call it W knot theory for now. So what is the set of all W knotted objects? It's the planar algebra with generators, the crossing, the virtual crossing, the vertex, and the cap. What's a planar algebra? So a planar algebra, well, it has a formal definition. In fact, it's due to Von Jones originally, and it came in a different context. But I don't think I want to give the formal definition, because informally it's rather clear. It's an algebra in which the objects can be thought of as being tiles, and you can multiply them by putting them side by side in the plane, but not necessarily along the line. Possibly, instead of putting them side by side, you could put one on top of each other, or one diagonally to the side of the other. And there is a formal way, there is a rather simple way of formalizing what are all the possible ways of multiplying a bunch of tiles together. I don't want to go through it, I'll just say that it's, I suppose, like a ring, but instead of having a single multiplication for putting things horizontally side by side, you have many, many multiplications for putting things in various ways side by side. So, you know, these are tiles from a game, and four of them assembled together to make a bigger tile. And now, this bigger tile can in itself be put next to other bigger tiles to make even bigger tiles. So that's, okay. In practice, what it means, you take these four little picturelets and you make all possible pictures using those. So for example, you make this one or that one or any other one using those. Okay? Now, I described the generators, but then there are relations. So you can check that if you multiply the crossing tile with another crossing tile, it's like having the empty product. Or in other words, topologically, four-dimensionally, what this stands for something four-dimensional, this stands for something four-dimensional, and they stand for the same thing. Okay? Likewise, there is a Rademeister 3 move that says that, well, it's just like the ordinary Rademeister 3 move of ordinary knot theory, except it means something else, but it still holds true. Likewise, there are several Rademeister 4 moves. So if you have a vertex and a strand going underneath it, you can slide it to go up. Again, these stand for things in four dimensions, and I'm claiming a four-dimensional equivalence of two things. And you can check it, okay? This could be also above, or it could be virtual. In all three cases, you could slide up. Then there are the virtual Rademeister moves, so like Rademeister moves, but involving the virtual crossings. Then there is a funny mixed move that says that if you have a real crossing and a virtual strand passing through it, or a strand with two virtuals going to its left, you can pass it to move on the right. But then there are also interesting things. So far it's all very dull. But there are also interesting things. So the overcrossings commute relation says, I will not tell you why it's called overcrossings commute, but I will tell you where the overcrossings are. If there is a virtual crossing here, and two overcrossings to the left, you can slide it, you can slide the two overcrossings until they are on the right. However, you cannot do it for undercrossings. So if you have something under, and you try to slide it across the virtual, no, you can't. Okay? Here is the schematic proof. I guess I turned it sideways. So I have two overcrossings, I want to slide them down. After inflating, the overstrand becomes a wide band. The two diagonal ones become diagonal bands that cross each other virtually. And it's clear that you can slide this, that you can slide the upper one down to below, and all throughout, when you inflate to R4, it's non-singular. However, when you try to do the same with the undercrossings commute, so here you have two undercrossings, and you want to slide it through a virtual, so you want to push this thin band to above. Well, when you try to do it, it's quite clear that it comes out twisted on the other side. Hence, undercrossings commute does not hold. Okay? Likewise, there is a cut-pull relation. So if you have a crossing and or a virtual crossing and a cupped strand going underneath it or virtually through it, you can pull the strand to the other side of the cup, but not above. Okay? There is some asymmetry. And what this stands for, I mean, four-dimensionally is, well, okay, exercise 3. It's easy. It's very, very easy. Right? Basically, well, no, I shouldn't say. In fact, I sort of used it. In fact, I said it already when I described this funny note at the... When I described this funny note at the beginning, this one, I said, had it been the other way around? Anyway. Okay, so these are the relations. By the way, it's a disturbing conjecture. We still don't know if these are all the relations. Okay? So let me pretend that they are. And so either pretend that they are, or work with the formal planar algebra in which you mod out these relations, and that subjects to knot theory, but we still don't know that it injects to knot theory. Anyway, that planar algebra actually has a couple of additional operations. Okay, namely, if you have two vertices connected by a band, this could be knotted, all of this picture could have been knotted, then I could sort of split this band into two parallel bands, and I get this picture. You know, topologically, or with the flying rings picture, what it stands for is if you have two rings that fly, merge, then fly together for a while as merged, and then split, I could make it, I could apply a little operation that would change it into two rings that almost merge, but are just still parallel. They fly together as two distinct but parallel rings, and then they split once again. So this operation is called unzip along an annulus. And the reason is that there is a parallel operation in one dimension down. So if you have a knotted graph, so this could be knotted, okay, but let me pretend it isn't because it's easier to draw, then there is an operation called unzip in which you replace this middle strand by a pair of parallel strands. And if you think of what zippers look like, well, I don't have one here, but anyway, that's exactly unzip. But that's unzip along a line. This is topologically unzip along an annulus. You replace the surface of the tube, which is an annulus, by two parallel annuli. And likewise, there is an unzip along a disk operation. So if you have a trivalent vertex and the end of it, and one of the ends is capped, then, well, this is really a disk. You can replace it by two parallel disks, and it becomes this picture. And again, these two are operations that take knots to other knots. Okay? So now I have a big fancy space of lots and lots of knots. It is represented using generators and relations, and it has many, many operations. Now notice that the machine that I described started with a ring and produced an algebraic problem. But I really didn't have to restrict myself to a ring. it could have been, the input could have been a sort of multi-ring, something that has many products. The notion of an ideal makes sense just as well. It will mean that, you know, if you multiply something in the ring with something in the ideal, using any of the available products, you get something in the ideal. Formal linear combination, so I could take formal linear combination of combinations of knots. That would be the parallel of the group ring. Formal linear combinations with sum of coefficients equal to zero will be an ideal just as well. Taking powers of the ideal makes sense just as well, because well, it just means you multiply two elements of the ideal, or n elements of the ideal, using all available operations. The associated graded, this sum of consecutive quotients, makes sense just as well. It inherits all the operations. It's again a planar algebra, and it has an operation that corresponds to the unzip along the angle. It inherits all the structure from before. So the machine still makes sense. I can still ask myself, is there a homomorphic expansion for four-dimensional knots? And then the answer is that this is equivalent to the Kashiwara-Verne problem, and I obviously don't have the time to explain why, but I, you know, if you're intrigued, look it up. Sorry for stopping this way. No, I'll stop with propaganda. I actually have like, I'm 10 minutes under time, 9 minutes under time, so I don't know, what should I do?
It's fine.
Okay, any questions, comments?
Maybe general question.
Yeah.
I could always ask someone. Are you trying to study algebra with topology, or are you trying to study topology with algebra?
Both, and it depends on the day of the week. So
the most concrete thing is which way?
The what? So maybe I should have said this is the tip of a major iceberg. So, for example, there is a map from usual knots. Usual knots means ordinary knots in three dimensions, into W knots, the knots that I've just described. And the map is sort of obvious. You just map a knot diagram to the same diagram, except it means something else. Okay? Now, you can ask yourself, is there an expansion for usual knots? A homomorphic expansion for usual knots? I have to tell you what the operations are, but the answer is, when you do it appropriately, the answer is yes, there is. And it is compatible with the expansion here. The algebraic problem that is being solved here is the Kashiwara-Verne problem. The algebraic problem that is being solved here is the problem of finding so-called dream-filled associators. Again, if you've heard of them, good. If you haven't, it's a long story. Okay? But then the topology explains the fact, which is due to Alexeyev and Torossian, that the two are, well, closely related, essentially equivalent. Okay? Or close to equivalent, without details. Okay? Now, there are other kind of benefits to algebra. So you get hard parts of algebra explained simply. Okay, but there are other parts of algebra that gets explained. So, for example, if you start from usual knots, then you can look at the inverse limit of modding out by the nth degree of the filtration. So you can look at this inverse limit, and this is somehow a completed space of knots. It turns out that a condition for being an expansion, so Z is an isomorphism of this with its associated graded, UA, okay? Whatever that is, okay? But you see, the set of isomorphism between any two objects is automatically acted on by two groups. The group of automorphisms of this one and the group of automorphisms of that one. It turns out that this is something that people in algebra study a lot, and it's called the Grothendieck-Tiepmüller groups. And no, actually, this one is the Grothendieck-Tiepmüller group. This is the graded version of the associated of the Grothendieck-Tiepmüller group. But then that's sort of the topological explanation of the Grothendieck-Tiepmüller group. And then, and again, as I said, there is more in that iceberg. Okay, that's on the side of what topology does to algebra. It basically explains things. Okay? What algebra does to topology is, well, you see, each of these z's is in particular a well-behaved invariant of knots. Well-behaved because it behaves well under all sorts of operations. Again, if I had more time, I could tell you how this would be, how this is useful in knot theory. But now I've probably answered too much. But you know, maybe I'll just say that it has implications to knot theory. Okay, you actually get good invariants this way. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, do these embedded spheres also have geometric invariants like the Alexander polynomial?
Yeah, so the invariant, okay, so when you restrict your attention to spheres, in the case of, in this W case, you get precisely the Alexander polynomial. When you allow yourself the parallel of links, so several component objects, or the parallel of tangles, so tubes that go from infinity to infinity, you get something which is sort of a non-abelian generalization of the multivariable Alexander polynomial, and I don't think it's been studied before. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's understood as a
Would
topological thing.
You detect this one by it?
Oh yeah, this one is detected, yes. Yeah. And in fact, I should say, well, I don't have pictures right now, but the theory is actually at the end computable. So you get invariants of these things in terms of trees and wheels, because the associated graded comes out to be trees and wheels, and they are completely computable. And there are computer programs to compute them, so. Yes.
I have two great questions because I don't understand a lot about it. So one question is, I've heard about the Kashiwara vacuum problem, but it was about representation theory, and it was solved by Dvorsky, Kirillov, and another person whom I cannot remember. Do you know about this? Must be something related, or maybe it's a totally different problem.
Yeah. No comment. I don't know. Good.
And the other thing is, so when you say you want to find an expansion which is solving equations in this graded, is this similar to Kontsevich's polarization or?
So the case, this case, UK, is the so-called Kontsevich integral.
Yeah.
With loosely speaking, so I mean, really, you have to. So the Kontsevich integral is just the case of knots, but you have to first. To make it interesting, to really connect with associators, you have to first generalize to knotted trivalent graphs. So basically, well, I've drawn one before or indicated that they exist before, but it's still a straightforward generalization of this Kontsevich integral. So, now. Actually, if you want to know how does the W story relate to the U story, to the Kontsevich integral, this is easier. W, but for some strange reason, you know, after you overcome the fear of four dimensions, it's actually much easier. So one. it's actually a piece, so this becomes a piece of that, which is actually computable, which actually isn't just words, but words that lead to computations.
No more questions? Well, thanks a lot, Paul.
Okay.